Hello and welcome to the September 2nd, 2015 edition of the Odelay Show with C.G. Braswell. Today is an editorial edition again, and our next interview for your edification will be with guests from the Arizona State University, ASU Tempe-based local to global justice organization. We'll be having a discussion about racial justice. Later this month, I expect. Today is a follow-up discussion about the final disposition of a civil dialogue that was put to the federal district court out here in the District of Arizona. Regarding a case brought on constitutional grounds in that constitutional court, wherein the petitioner, namely I, attempted to sue an agent for the IRS in her individual capacity, civil capacity. After her administrative actions regarding tax year 2013, as I, for the tax process in early 2014, set into a collection and denied a deferral or a delay in my payment. I didn't have the money. I asked for an extension or a deferral, rather, whatever the language was. And she denied it and set into a collection process. Pardon the doorbell. So my voluntarily assessed taxes were then became no longer a volunteer situation. And so I brought, on grounds of racketeering influenced and corrupt organizations, civil code, alleging that she and her, you know, unknown colleagues, unknown to me, were essentially functioning as a criminal syndicate, an ad hoc criminal syndicate, in as much as what they're doing is unconstitutional. Also on grounds of relief, citing Title 42 civil rights, that is, you can't just, in the United States, or constitutionally, you can't just determine, well, I'm going to take this percentage from everybody's earnings, period, because I'm an agent of the government, a representative, a government agency. That's against the law. That's unconstitutional. It's against the law. And the third of the three grounds for relief that I stipulated in the briefs for the case was False Claims Act. Essentially saying that I'm being defrauded because I am the truly incumbent government agent in this sense as a citizen of the United States. And I'm not committing any unconstitutional transgressions while the defendant, in fact, was. I don't know if any of you all have ever considered that construction of the False Claims Act, but fundamentally, I do believe it. I filed the case back in December of 2014. The bench here, Judge Soto, J.A. Soto, and the United States District Court for the District of Arizona in the Tucson venue, dismissed it with prejudice in affirmation of motions from the United States Department of Justice and the United States Attorney for the District of Arizona, motions to dismiss from those two offices. The United States Attorney basically focused on dismissing the False Claims Act. Well, the motion to dismiss focused mainly on taking down or tearing apart the argument that it had grounds on to sue on the False Claims Act. But the motion was for to dismiss the entire litigation. The Department of Justice primarily focused not on the False Claims Act, but on the other two, the RICO and the civil rights. I wrote Judge Soto, and I'm about to read the letter to you. Wrote him on August 15th. Judge Soto, the opinions and statements in this letter are not meant to be recalcitrant or incendiary. Rather, they summarize my perspective, and I'm trying to positively contribute to the dialogue and forward the issue by communicating with you in good faith and frankness with intellectual honesty. I'm fascinated by your station and its endless requirements of applied philosophical consideration. And I respect your reputation as associations and matriculating institutions. I am grateful for your patience and time in reading me. That is probably not surprising for you to hear coming from a journalist. I appreciate that you're a civil servant and that you continue to answer the call to serve people, the people of the United States. And I appreciate the complex and subtle constitutional implications that you countenance at your station for the people of all nations. I want you to know that I personally and sincerely thank you for your career-long efforts to date, and that I'm certain we must share a sizable patch of common ground. In the erstwhile Braswell versus Unger, 2014 CV-02574, I appreciate that my novice experience will be useful in my postgraduate studies and my ongoing political writing and for my personal philosophical background. I'm grateful for the ostensible access to the process, the court staff, and the venue. I see the strategy of your pulling punches and affirming the stated positions of attorneys for the Department of Justice and the District Attorney's Office. I do not prefer your order to dismiss, but I do see its potential. I know that that opportunity remains for me to bring the same constitutional questions to bear more formidably and clearly and accompanied by proper counsel, notwithstanding my doubts about the incumbency of a legal bar, whose constituents have, quite cynically and with tongue-in-cheek, batted down a legitimate constitutional complaint. I'll always stand by the axiom that United States official capacity or agency should never be grounds for any unconstitutional activity whatsoever, and such a notion is antithetical to civil liberty. Official capacity is a legal fiction in any sense that it is used as a tool to protect unconstitutional entities or activities, or criminals. Moreover, I still maintain that generally the citizenry does not naturally owe to the federal purse. I still firmly consider that my civil liberties were flagrantly violated by way of the armed involuntary collection, which took place as a direct result of Respondent Unger's administrative catalyst. It is fairly easy to talk me into investing what little cash I have been handed, all of it so far, as I am a standard bearer for the high ideals that the dollar as an institution is supposed to represent. But under a gun, sir, the situation changes. And although the focus of the complaint was on what happened after the respondent set into motion the collection in question, I still assert that Respondent Unger and her agency cannot investigate me in perpetuity or perennially without proper cause. For its surveillance of the citizenry, perhaps the agency, at a minimum, needs to work on an approach more direct than hearsay for its solicitations, or develop a more honestly and clearly advertised mode of operation. Your ostensible protection of the respondent's position as a blind, cynical creature, and your affirmation of the belligerent positions of the Department of Justice and the United States Attorney's Office that cite official capacity is insulting and disturbing. Your footnote criticism of my prosaic style was melodramatic, and your sweeping dismissal of the constitutional complaint was a display of the court's capacity for tenured capriciousness. The petitioner's situation in the matter was a legitimate, simple question, which was clearly and thoughtfully articulated. Regardless of implicit construction potentially coming to hand, you blatantly kicked the can. As a media scholar, content carrier, and professional communicator, I will always counsel caution against broadcasting the wrong ethical message for all to hear for the mere sake of business-as-usual fishing expeditions. in a marketplace where we are put upon personally, with responsibilities to include those of both scholarship and education. Yes, misinformation is an important tool for such a dragnet, but it is a bare fact that such policy does cause new malefactors, thereby making a moral liability for the people of the United States. Let us ever abide truth as it harbors freedom and hope. The bench's affirmation of the obtuse, intractable, and frankly sophomoric, if not moronic, Department of Justice and United States Attorney's Office arguments is an encroachment either by or upon the executive that conflates the two branches and confuses and hampers the function of the judiciary to which you were appointed. This places the court and its prosecutors over a barrel with respect to its obligate constitutional duty and diminishes the role of the judiciary to that of some political or partisan caucus. Many, if not most, people are happy to read one thing while knowing that it means another. But as a man of letters and a student of philosophy, I tell you that such semantics certainly do matter, and semiotics, and particularly do so in such an august venue. Innuendo can only be folded over so many times before the original meaning disappears, but straightforward treatment of a matter stands the test of time. The people are better off having its judicial officers speak up front and clearly regarding the rule of law. In a Hobbesian sense, for example, among others, certain aspects of constitutional jurisprudence are illuminated by your refusal to allow the case to proceed in the venue, regardless of my layman status. Of course, I do understand that time is of the essence, but taking it face value, the words in the order to dismiss more directly serve an aristocracy than the people or the law that the court is bound to uphold. Moving forward, I still like the racketeering influence corrupt organization's toolkit for the bringing to justice of illegal tax collection operators. I think the False Claims Act has a bright future in this segment as well, and Title 42 Civil Rights is still important because of the mode and potential severity of the offense. Dutifully and verily, Chris G. Braswell, Hereford, Arizona. So that's the letter that I sent to the bench. I think that, with all due respect, I think that it's the prejudice dismissal is essentially a sign that says, appeal it. You're right. What am I going to do? That tells me that our judiciary is compromised. If that hypothetical situation is in fact to a T how it is, then yes, the judiciary is compromised because the bench is unable to say, you're right, we can't do what we're doing, it's against the law, it's unconstitutional, it's the people's currency. Okay, it's like trying to cash a bill. But he can't for some reason. So why not? That means there's a ruling class. And that means that the courts are compromised in their authority. Or it could be construed in another nuanced interpretation of what he's saying. He was appointed by President Obama. And so that's a partisan appointment. So you look at the river that is we're stepping in with respect to that before and behind us. Okay. That said, you would expect maybe a more progressive opportunity. Well, a progressive opportunity like this one to have been seized upon more in more welcome fashion than this was. What we're seeing here is a very conservative move or policy essentially being implemented, legislated by the court. That is, we're going to keep this wide open fishing expedition that violates the constitutional right of every citizen wide open just for the sake of surveillance. Okay? That's about as conservative as you can get in terms of law enforcement. And that's exactly what's happening. Now, I don't cite the Internal Revenue Service in general. I'm a forensic professional as well. I'm a journalist. And I understand that to some significant extent and in good faith and by rights, this jurist and the Internal Revenue Service and the Department of the Treasury, they're all colleagues of mine. We're partisans. When they're doing what they're, when it's those institutions or protocols are applied properly and within the confines of constitutional law. When they're not, the reason I brought this case, I'm not a lawyer. But no one was doing anything about it. And I felt not to, you know, this is my go at this particular walk of our lives by way of my particular credential. And this is how it's panned out so far. In a more short-sighted reading of his dismissal, it appears to be notwithstanding the fact that it's dismissed with prejudice, you know, he's not going to hear the argument. That's what that prejudice dismissal means. Well, that's fine. It's not necessarily bad. It's a change of venue, if you will, in a de facto sense. You know, but all of the agate, the bench's affirmation of the DOJ and the attorney's office argument that the respondent or defendant was functioning in her official capacity, and therefore the case is brought on jurisdictionally off the mark because I sued her in her individual capacity. That is absolutely preposterous. And I said so in the letter that I just read. You can't just say, well, this is official capacity, so we can steal from you all. We can surveil you all the time, forever, everybody, because it's official capacity. Well, no, you cannot. I mean, you do. I have something really strong to say about it. It's just cause for anyone. And that's why I use the word sophomoric, if not moronic, or belligerent, in the blind, cynical. That's what it is. So in as much as these agencies and these agents are working in good faith, and they are colleagues and partisans and confidants of mine, and insofar that they aren't, now whether they, you know, let's say that the tax collector doesn't know that she's breaking the law. I don't care if she knows. She is, and she's doing it, and I'm, you know, it's making, I am the transgressed. The victim, if you will. So, and I suspect that an investigator for the IRS for decades understands police work, if you will, investigations, you know, public investigations, as so to speak, you know, and understands the lay of the land in terms of law in the gray area that they have to operate in well, quite well enough to know that what they're doing is, and you might say, technically against the law, but it just flat out is. So, before I brought this case, when I was still living up in Phoenix, I consulted a couple of attorneys and neither wanted to take the case. I think I could have probably convinced one of them to cough it up. The other one just said flat out, no, it'll make me look bad to the bar association. No one, it's unwinnable. You know, it'll put you and your family and your career in danger. The idea to bring the issue to court came to me. I was prompted by Senator John McCain, having written to him about the armed collection that took place. I went and paid the bill. The tax wasn't much. It was like $2,000-something. It wasn't like, it's not, I mean, I'm a self-employed journalist. I'm not, you know, I generally function on handouts. And you know, honesty, my good word, because that's, you know, it's nice. It's like a religion. I don't really have to. I'm not ever probably going to ever have to work for the man in a cubicle anymore. But the principle of the thing, I asked for a deferral, so because I didn't have the money, and they said no. And I was like, this is really not right. And I went to pay in person because I wanted to go see, and I had to go through a checkpoint. I brought my son with me. We had to take off our shoes and belts. They were armed. They weren't hearing any shit off us, that's for sure. You come in here and cough up your check. Well, anyway, so I do go on and have and will. But that's the letter to the bench. That's how it stands right now. I'm thinking about starting a Kickstarter for this particular deal so I can actually afford to pay an attorney, because the next step forward is to contract an attorney and have them help me negotiate. In order, I really, really do. You know, I think there's new ground that can be covered here. I think that False Claims Act, I think we could do a class action, that we could get a herd of people to sign under that thing. And that might cause your tax collectors to think twice before they just, well, I'm official capacity, you can't do anything about me, I'll watch you all year long and take this percentage of your money. Well, the False Claims Act really settled down the nonsense. It still goes on to some degree, but it did help calm down the racketeering orgy that was going on in healthcare. How about a little bit of that corrective shadow going on in the taxation cottage industry? How about it? How about we call organized crime exactly what it is? You know, call a spade a spade. It is what it is. Tell me that I don't understand it insults me. I know better. And I don't, you know, we're all indentured. It's our money, and we are the government. We are a self-governing democracy. That means self-government. That means not other people rule us. That means not ruling classes among us rule us. That means that when need be, you put on your federale hat and you do your deal there. You and me. Not people that you don't know and never see, whose children aren't allowed to come around you because they think you stink. Or whatever. Okay? So, and the civil rights? Yeah. You can't lock the currency up where it doesn't matter for the people. They don't care if tax goes on rampant out the wahoo, because they've got plenty. They'll pay that tax all day long just to show that they can, you know. Because who cares if the people who are barely getting by can get by? You know, I got by. That's unconstitutional as well, even though it does serve the ruling class. I mean, a lot of us here, we're all listening to this on high tech, you know, cutting edge, military grade information technology, you know, podcast here. We're doing well enough. We have the time to sit and listen to political speech. We don't have to go down necessarily, some of us may, you know, and flip bean burgers for minimum wage. So we already, that's when apathy sets in. Well, what does it matter, you know? For me, should I pay the $1,000 consultation fee for this? I don't really have very much more than that in the bank, and I know that I don't have $70,000 or however much it'll typically cost to typically litigate a case. I know I don't have that. But even on the consultation fee, well, it's pretty important. And if I don't, I feel like I'm just giving up. It's okay to rob me. It's okay to steal from me. There's nothing I can do about it because you told me no. So, be honest. Have you ever traveled for vegan food? Have you ever planned a vacation around vegan food finds? Do you take photos of your food and dream of your next meal and sharing it on social media? Oh, yeah. Then you're going to love this. Check out this newly released memoir, Will Travel for Vegan Food, a Young Woman's Solo Van-Dwelling Mission to Break Free, Find Food, and Make Love, written by Kristen Lajeunesse. In it, Kristen explores the personal side of a 2-year-long journey wherein she set out to eat at every single vegan restaurant, cafe, food truck, and eatery she could find in the United States, while living out of a van and entirely off of donations. Even though her project blog maintained food-related updates through the journey, Kristen's memoir is about things that she never dared share publicly until now, including people she met, how the journey quite literally changed her life, and even some romantic encounters. Dad, if you're listening, skip chapter 8. Pick up a copy of Will Travel for Vegan Food on Amazon.com or on veganpublishers.com. Also, see where Kristen is now by following her Will Travel for Vegan Food social media pages and her blog at WTFveganFood.com. That solves it. So yes, Kristen was on this show. One of the first guests we had. Lovely woman, and very sweet, and a foodie, a vegan foodie. I have four years plus now of a vegan diet, and my son and the dog and both cats, and we love it. Logistically, very clean footprint and very healthy. So don't forget to eat your vegetables. Don't forget to vote. You know, and do your yoga. That solves it for the September 2nd, 2015 edition of the Odelay Show with C.G. Braiswell. Thank you to our sponsor, Will Travel for Vegan Food, Kristen Lajeunesse, and her support. Show also brought to you by independent publisher Braiswell Communications and its latest nonfiction production, Embedded Alive, First Person Journalism in the United States of America by C.G. Braiswell. It's available at, the book is available at my website, www.fusepowder.com. That's F-U-S-E-P-O-W-D-E-R, Fuse Powder. Also, fusepowder.com/ WordPress is the archive of this, The Odelay Show. Also look for Private Eye, Denver Days, Pizza Noir, series of hard-boiled science fiction, dystopian fantasy, detective novels, detective novels, available at www.denverday.com. Also a Braiswell Communications joint. Book one is there. You'll love it. It's not safe for work, but it's good. Book two will go into production just as soon as my Library of Congress number gets sent to me. I already have the production files ready and waiting, and it should be out within a couple of weeks. Peace and Oil, Book 2, Alpha Taxonomy. That's the Odelay Show. Stick around. See you next time.